Marking the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army and a look at the military presence right in the middle of our community. We look back at one of the interviews we did earlier this year as we take a look at the year that was 2025 on The Cities. Today's program brings back an interview we conducted in May as we traveled to Arsenal Island to help mark the 250th birthday of the U.S. Army. Our host that day, the staff at the Rock Island Arsenal Museum. As the nation marks its 250th birthday next year, the Army marked its 250th in May. And we were joined by the commander of the 1st Army, Lieutenant General Mark Landis, who took over in September of 2024. We talked about the U.S. Army, its history, its future, and its servicemen and women. Our interview with Lieutenant General Landis from May 22nd at Arsenal Island. We talked to you, and it's Memorial Day weekend. A lot of people think of camping. They think of enjoying time with their family, which is important. But, I mean, for a military man, Memorial Day means so much more.
Yeah, Jim, so thanks for having me here on this special weekend. And I do think it's different. So there are two holidays that usually kind of go hand in hand in people's imagination when they think about it, Memorial Day and Veterans Day. And so Veterans Day is usually, that's when you hear thanks for your service, because everybody who served in the armed forces, you know, went to combat, that's a veteran. So they thank you for Veterans Day. But sometimes when I'm doing Memorial Day, they say thanks for your service, and no, this is not the holiday that we're here for. So Memorial Day, you know, created to remember those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. They gave their lives in the defense of our American values and our American way of life. And so it does mean a lot to us when we recognize Memorial Day. I was just having a conversation with my team, because you say Merry Christmas or Happy New Year, but you don't say Happy Memorial Day. You know, you can, I think I've said you can enjoy Memorial Day, but you know, please remember why we're having this holiday. It's for those people who gave the ultimate sacrifice, and just as importantly, the families that were affected by those.
Well, and I think of Memorial Day, and no more fitting area is the National Cemetery and Arsenal Island. I mean, I know that the sexton and all the workers make sure that all the tombstones are perfectly lined up after a winter of frost, and they may have moved, and it's all set up for this Memorial Day. You have children from the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and volunteers. They're putting small flags on the tombstones. You really feel the impact of Memorial Day here on Arsenal Island.
No, I think you do, and it's right in the middle of the heart of the island, and the island's in the heart of the Quad Cities, and so I always think about this idea of service that the Quad Cities represent so well. And in the heartbeat of their Quad Cities is Rock Island Arsenal, and the heartbeat of the Arsenal is the National Cemetery. But thanks for mentioning that. So we are going to plant flags. Right now I think it's scheduled for Thursday. For those people who want to come do it, I'm happy to be out there in order to honor those that came before us.
I know there is one particular paratrooper who we just lost. Tell me a little bit about that story, and it really hits home for you.
Yeah, so Henry Langham parachuted in on D-Day. Most people can see that in the movie, the famous, you know, the longest day, that when he parachutes into the greenhouse, that was him they did. So people can relate to the fact that they've seen him represented in a movie. But when you talk to him, and especially when we're talking about Memorial Day, and really get to his stories about friends that he lost and the confusion of D-Day, but you really, it brings back this idea of why we are here, and all that of the greatest generation that were, you know, thinking about defending our freedom against the tyranny of the time. But the Quad Cities has so many stories. I mean, you have a street in Sylvia, it's called Hero Street. Over 200 people have served in the armed forces off this one street, 84 of them in, you know, Korea, Vietnam, and World War II, and it's lost eight people have given the ultimate sacrifice from this one street inside the Quad Cities. And so, some great stories there when you do, you know, they're one family lost, you know, two brothers and a cousin, you know, in World War II off of that street. So Quad Cities has a lot to be proud of in the way they've supported service to the country.
Well, and you bring up Hero Street and you talk about, you know, a very strong Hispanic influence in that area. It really does show that the Army is a melting pot and a reflection of society.
It is, and that's what makes it great, is that it's coming from the population of the United States and reflects our values and character. And I always tell people every time, they always lament, well, then this generation or that generation, I've had an opportunity to serve, you know, for 35 years. I've seen every group come in, and it is still the same values and character that make America great. These people willing to do selfless service to the nation. So,
you brought up D-Day and the storming of the beaches of Normandy, and the Greatest Generation, as they have been called, we're losing them so many each year. And you're going to be at Normandy for the celebration on June 6th, representing the United States. I was there a few years ago, and it is so powerful, and there is so much reflection and appreciation for what Americans did.
There is, and so I had the opportunity to be there for the 50th, you know, early in my career, and was so impacted by, you know, what the sacrifices resulted in. So it's the people of France, the people of England, the people all over Europe coming in and so thankful for the sacrifices America made on their behalf. But when you walk into a cemetery, even the one here on Rock Island, and look at all the white crosses, it does make you realize, hey, I'm here on you know, to live the life I'm living because others were willing to sacrifice. And to see the sacrifice laid out in all those white crosses is truly impactful, I think.
Let's move to the future. You're in charge of the First Army. It has a powerful impact worldwide.
It does. So First United States Army right now responsible for supporting the National Guard and the reserves, 54% of the Army, as they get ready to deploy. And so we deploy, you know, National Guard and reserves, you know, to all over the place. And so Iraq, Syria, you know, Germany in the Pacific. And so what we do here through our teams that are scattered around the United States is ensure that they come and we train them to make sure they meet the readiness standards for what we think they're going to engage in. And so we're really looking forward to what the future of warfare will be and making sure that our training prepares them for whatever they might engage.
You took command just recently,
I did.
November.
So I did have the opportunity to be the acting commander for about 20 months. And so this is really kind of my third year in the seat. And then before that, I commanded a division inside of it. So this has been truly a great experience for me. I laugh all the time when I got told I was coming to First Army. I told my boss, I'm you sure you want me? I don't know that much about National Guard Reserve. I'd been doing other things for most of my career, and I have just really grown to love the citizen soldier, and the fact that they're willing to volunteer, you know, on top of what they're doing, whatever job they have, they're willing to volunteer to serve the country. It's just another level of selfless service. I tell all the time, you know, I do this, you know, 24/7, 365, but for these citizen soldiers, you know, it's, you know, they're 39 days a year and they come on, but they spend so much more time than the 39 days to ensure that they are, you know, professional and competent.
And it like you said, it takes a certain person to do that, a certain selflessness and a certain level of country.
It does. And so this heart of service, this idea, this is not something that the Army trains. We're always proud to say we can train you professionally and competently in tactics and the technical aspect of what we do. But I tell people, and when I talk to families, I really thank them because it's really this idea that the family instills, this heart of service, that they can see something bigger than them, and that's not something that you train into somebody. And so I'm very appreciative of everybody in this country, and especially those that can influence young people to have a heart of service. Regardless if it's in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, there's a lot of service. You know, you got first responders, you know, all kinds of people that are serving this great country.
Well, and the key, though, is the recruitment of these people. And I know that it comes in waves. There are times when recruitment is good. There's times when it's less good. A lot of it sometimes has to do with the economy as well. How's recruitment right now?
Recruitment right now is really good. And so we were impacted, as the nation was, by COVID. And so that, you know, COVID pulled our ability to interact with potential people that wanted to come in. So we couldn't really tell them what we were about. And so as we were able to get through COVID and get back to telling the Army story and what the opportunities were for service, I think we saw improvement in recruiting. And so right now we're on pace to make the mission that we've been asked to make. And I think that's just a showing of how the country feels about, you know, service to the country.
Is there a certain type of person you're looking for? Because as you said, you want people that have a love of country, that have a love of the Army. What makes a good possible soldier?
What a great question. You know, I think it's all types. And so whatever your motivation is in coming into the service, it's not something that you're going to just do on the sideline. You've got to put your heart into the service. And I tell people all the time when they come in, whether you're being patriotic or, you know, you want college money or something like that, that's not what gets you up at 2 o'clock in the morning in the rain to go check. You know, it's this idea that you're serving something bigger than you. And I counsel a lot of when I do commissioning ceremonies, lieutenants, I was like, hey, make sure you understand the why you're serving. And when we get them in, they may come in with whatever reason they have, but the people that you know understand that it's about the brothers and sisters to your left and right, and the fact that you're serving a greater good. Once you figure that out, then you see them, their true passion and love for the service.
And that passion and that American spirit is celebrating 250 years right now with the Continental Congress creating the Army. Tell me about the 250th birthday, the celebration. And a certain pride there as well. I mean, the Army is older than the nation.
By year.
Look at the smile, yes. Yeah. That has been said before.
Yeah, by year.
So we laugh because we're like, hey, we're just rehearsing for the whole country because next year everybody will be celebrating 250 great years of the great experiment. But the Army created a year before the country was, and I think that's telling that it takes citizens that are willing to serve in order to create this concept of America. And so we are very proud, June 14th, that we're going to be celebrating the Army's 250th birthday. We've got celebrations here in the Quad Cities that we're doing. So we're excited to celebrate with everybody, and we'll see a roll into America's 250 next year too.
Well, and the annual Army Ball is usually a very big event, but this year bigger?
It is. I mean, we're going to be more focused on 250 years and really going back into our history. And so we have guest speakers, you know, Mr. Bolt coming down from Minnesota, who is a World War II vet. And then we're going to bring a young 18-year-old, just raised his right hand. And so we're really going to try to go backwards and go forwards in our Army 250 celebration.
Yeah, that 18-year-old, I got to get this right, is Corbin Bluebaugh, who is a Davenport Central student, I believe.
He is.
He's going to be sworn in during the Army Ball. I mean, that's got to be a monumental moment for him in his life.
I think it's monumental for anybody that raises their right hand. It is going to be for him, but anybody that raises their right hand, I think they're making a commitment to something bigger than them, and I think that's just an awesome thing to celebrate.
Absolutely. What do you hope to see as far as celebrations go for the coming year when it comes to, let's say, for the Army, first of all, as well as for the nation?
You know, just a connection with the Army and the citizens. You know, sometimes we get concerned that we get too busy and we're not really talking to everybody, making sure they understand that, you know, we are a product of our great country and we represent them wherever we go to fight and win our nation's wars. And so I do think all these celebrations that we're doing for the Army 250 is just an opportunity for us to reconnect with everybody in understanding what our role is. And then for the nation's 250, I mean, it is the great experiment, you know, 250 years that we get to celebrate, you know, the comings and goings. And, you know, if you've ever studied history, it's been there and here and everywhere in this experiment. And so it's been fun to be part of it.
Because we've been talking a lot about Army training, and I'm trying to think of the future right now. Mm. The citizen soldier of 50 years ago and the citizen soldier of today, much different, and the citizen soldier for tomorrow is going to be even more different. How important is technology in the First Army right now?
Technology is critical, but it always has been critical. And so when you study back the history of warfare, the fact that the longbow changed the warfare in medieval times and it was able to penetrate armor, the fact that we improved the rifle, gave it rifling, and so instead of a muzzle loader only going 80 meters, now you can go 300. We are experiencing another technology jump. And the two biggest innovations is this idea of constant observation. And so people get, when they think about that, they think about unmanned aerial surveillance vehicles, UASs, but it's also satellites and it's all spectrum. And so electronic magnetic waves, they're even talking about quantum radars in the future. So it's your, the ability to see you and know what you are is going to be all penetrating. And so I do think that's a change. And then the other is going to be this that everybody's going to face is AI, artificial intelligence. And so how do you incorporate artificial intelligence that allows the human to make better judgments? And I think that's where we see, the biggest advantage is how does it enable us to make the decisions we need to make in a more timely and more thorough way?
Because when I think of warfare right now, you kind of look to Ukraine and you're looking at how drones are being used on both sides, which has really changed warfare in some ways. You're also looking at disinformation and misinformation on both sides. There's a lot that's being learned from this conflict that I'm sure that's being used as far as training is concerned for future American soldiers.
Absolutely. And so we have sent people over to Ukraine to study that conflict. And anytime you study a particular conflict, you got to understand that it's its own thing.
Exactly.
You can't just take every lesson and say and apply it to everywhere in the world.
It can't be replicated.
Right.
But it's on your radar, so to speak.
It is, and I think there's things that are illuminating to how we're going to do it, and we are training differently. And this idea that you are going to be constantly observed, and what does that mean, and can you be engaged? So it has caused us to replicate some of that training. We in First Army are building our own UASs that we are using in order to do training for people to get used to that part of the change in warfare. But like I said before, it's not, if you don't hear a UAS, doesn't mean you're not observed. There's a lot of things that are looking right now.
And I think in some ways, when we're talking about training, it's more than just the physical.
Absolutely. And so the Army is doing a thing they call holistic health and fitness. And the famous quote that your head is connected to your heart, which is connected to your body. And if all you're trying to do is physically improve your body, but not working on your spiritual, mental, physical as a triad, you're not going to be who the biggest, fastest, strongest person that you can be, and so or smartest. So we do spend a lot of time working on all components of fitness. Like I said, we call it holistic health and fitness. This program is all over the Army, and I think it's seen real benefits to soldiers as they continue to make sure that they're ready for the next.
Your command is located in Rock Island in the heart of the Quad Cities at Arsenal Island. You've been here, as you said, a number of months, easily years right now. Tell me about the Quad City experience.
Yeah.
How welcoming has, there's been a big effort when the First Army was relocated here to make sure that the Quad Cities was military friendly.
Yeah, what a great place to live and work. The fun thing when, having to be able to live all over the world and all over the nation, you get to experience this. And so Mari, my wife, and I, when we moved to the Quad Cities, didn't really know what to expect, and just a great community. And her first thing is, everybody is so friendly here and helpful. And we've enjoyed everything about the Quad Cities, been able to be parts of the theater and gone to ball games and just what an opportunity. But it's really the people, the people make the community, and the people of the Quad Cities, absolutely fantastic.
Well, the Army has done whatever it can to make sure that people who come and go in the First Army here on Rock Island Arsenal that they get acclimated. That's really important, as you were saying, because it is the mind as well as the body. How important is it to make sure that the Army soldier is not only physically, but really mentally prepared?
I'm not sure you ever get acclimated to the Rock Island cold, do you?
Fair enough.
It's a great question. Sorry to make the joke, but we do believe, it's called onboarding, we do believe that you mentally have to be prepared for the rigors. And so there's important that we not only bring you in and get you settled, but then you have to go through the kind of stress test of, because you're going to experience highs and lows in life, anybody will. It's not just a soldier or their family's lot to experience highs and lows. And once you start experiencing some rigor and stress, you actually grow. You know, the famous saying, you know, growth and comfort don't coexist. And so if you're comfortable, you're probably not growing. And so there is some things that we do to make sure that you can grow as a person.
I'm going to let you have your last word in regards to a Memorial Day. I mean, you said it so well, is that people do have to remember what it's about. It's not a celebration. It's actually a remembrance at most. And to do it here at Rock Island Arsenal National Cemetery, home of the 1st Army, has got to be very special.
It is. And the Quad Cities have great stories, you know. You know, whether Staff Sergeant Nathan Cox or BJ Luxmore, Corporal Luxmore, or Captain Josh Steele, there are people that had a heart of service here in the Quad Cities and they volunteered. Unfortunately, those three gentlemen gave their lives in Afghanistan, that buried here in the local area, their Gold Star parents, sisters, brothers, spouses, kids, all here local. And you really see the opportunity for the community to support those that have sacrificed, not just the individual, but like I said, I think it's just important to remember the sacrifices the families made, the friends made that lost somebody way too early, but they lost them to the reason they were doing it was to ensure our way of life, to ensure that America could experience the freedoms that we do. So I do want to say thanks to everybody in the Quad City for the support they give to the military, but I hope that they take the time this Memorial Day to remember that there are people out there that have given the ultimate sacrifice for them to enjoy their freedoms and to continue to support those who make that decision to do that.
Our thanks to Lieutenant General Mark Landis, commander of the U.S. 1st Army based in Rock Island. That interview conducted on May 22nd. We're getting closer to Christmas and New Year's and some great ideas for you to go out and about thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Start your week off by getting a ukulele lesson at Front Street Brewery and Tap Room, right in time for the holiday season. Then, get ready for an evening full of prizes and community vibes at Mercado on 5th. Plus, it's free. Next, enjoy another free event. This time, it's a trivia night, where you can win some amazing prizes as well. Then, enjoy an indoor winter market at the Freight House Farmers Market every Saturday during these cold months. And finally, watch this classic holiday movie be brought to life on stage at Circa 21 Dinner Playhouse. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
Next year marks 250 years since that fateful day in 1776 when America was born. Leading up to the 4th of July next year, we're asking people about their civic spark, why they chose their career, and how it impacts our society. It seemed fitting that we started our series by posing that question to 1st Army Commander, Lieutenant General Mark Landis. So in May, we asked him, what is your civic spark?
I got into the military kind of on a dare, you know what I'm saying, and with nothing really better to do when I was 18. And that's why I always counsel people is, whatever reason you came in, there's a reason that's going to cause you to continue to serve. You know, my reason to come in, that light's not going to last, you know, very long. And so I did have an opportunity to attend United States Military Academy, and over the course of training and being able to do it, I fell in love with the idea of serving soldiers. And that passion that was ignited there at the academy has lasted, like I said, 35 years. And so when you're in the service of soldiers, I think that becomes its own its own benefit, because you can see the growth and you can see your impact. But and sometimes you don't forget the idea that you're supporting and defending the Constitution of the United States and that you're preparing to fight and win our nation's wars. But it's the brotherhood, sisterhood of being part of this organization, of people that have volunteered, selfless service, like-minded individuals. It's just a passion.
Our thanks to Lieutenant General Mark Landis, Commander of the U.S. First Army. And our thanks to you as we look back at the year 2025 with some of the interviews we did feature on this program. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.